Welcome to Digital Health Talks. Each week, we meet with healthcare leaders making an immeasurable difference in equity, access, and quality. Hear about what tech is worth investing in and what isn't as we focus on the innovations that deliver. Join Megan Antonelli, Janae Sharp, and Shahid Shah for a weekly No BS deep dive on what's really making an impact in healthcare.
Everybody, welcome to Health Impact Live Digital Health Talks. This is Megan Antonelli, and today we're exploring a question that should matter to every health system executive. What if the solution to America's number one killer isn't in your pharmacy, but it's in your kitchen? One of our favorite topics, food is medicine. We are excited to have our guest, Dr. Elizabeth Clotus, founder and chief medical officer of Step One Foods. Dr. Clotus trained at Mayo Clinic and Hopkins. She spent 2 decades as a preventative cardiologist before she confronted an uncomfortable truth. Most doctors, including herself, were never asking patients about diet, the one intervention that could rival pharmaceuticals. So I'm excited to have Dr. Clotus here today to talk about her company and what she's doing with Step One Foods. Hi, Dr. Clotus, how are you?
Hi, great to be with you, Megan. Pleasure.
I'm so excited to chat. I know you were recently at Health, which is one of our favorite events to go to for digital health. And as I said, food is medicine has been an area that we've been covering quite a bit, both at Health Impact, our conference, as well as on the show. So, but one of the main reasons why I'm having you here is you are a female founder, and we have a long history of interviewing female founders here. So I'd love to hear your founder story around Step One.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me. I'm an accidental entrepreneur. I did not go to medical school ever imagining I would be a female founder of anything. But I did go to medical school with the goal of curing people, right? Of really helping them heal. And I, you said I trained at Mayo, Johns Hopkins. I mean, it was 14 years of post-high school education. It's a long road to become a cardiologist. And I left those institutions so excited and so idealistic. I was going to do it. I was so well prepared to cure heart disease. And yet what I was taught to do, and I followed my teachings, right, high cholesterol, here's a pill. High blood pressure, here's 2 pills. Blockage, here's a stent. But no matter how many drugs I put my patients on, no matter how many stents got implanted, nobody looked better. Nobody felt better. In fact, especially when it came to the medications, most patients, or a lot of my patients, were telling me, all the stuff you've put me on has just made me feel worse. And there were no cures. Just a never-ending revolving door of follow-up visits. And I would tell you, about 5 years into practice, I was like, this is not what I signed up for. And I'm not sure what got into me on that one day, but patient came, they were sitting and we're going through their labs, which were perfect, right? Their list of medications, which was long. And I said, well, what do you eat? And what they told me was shocking. On a couple of levels, number one is what they were actually eating, which was like, oh my gosh, no wonder you're on so many medications. These drugs have to work really hard to overcome what you're doing inadvertently, right? No one goes out of their way to eat in a fashion that is actually counteracting their care. People just don't realize that they're doing that. They're trying their best. But the second thing, which was even more shocking to me, they said, no one's ever asked me that before. No doctor has ever asked me that before. And I'm like, wait a second. I'm a cardiologist. I am way down the care stream, right? People have typically seen multiple other physicians before seeing me. And wait, no one asked you about what you eat? Right. And so then I started asking patient after patient. It was the same thing over and over and over again. And I'm looking around like, wait a second. I have discovered, this completely un- untapped area of, you know, therapeutic intervention. And to be clear, I'm not a food scientist by, you know, pre-training before going to medical school. You know, this, I'm just a foodie. I've always enjoyed cooking. And, you know, like, wait, these, my patients are not eating the way I'm eating. And so I started reading up on this, right? And again, none of this is a discovery I made. We know what to eat. There's so many studies. They're so consistent. We just don't do it, right? So, okay, I sent patients to dietitians. I sent them, you know, I gave them pamphlets, cookbooks. Here's a website. Here's all these resources. And here was the amazing thing. The people who did it, it was astonishing. Medications list shrank. Diagnoses were melting away. My patients were becoming non-patients. This was the very first time I was affecting cures. My problem was I could count those miracles on one hand. To do this right is hard. It's really hard. You have to know what you're doing, or you have to make a huge commitment to like completely change, you know, change your nutrition habits. And so I thought like, well, wait a second. My patients will take a pill twice a day. What if I create something that is like just closes the main nutrition gaps? Again, not a secret. We don't get enough fiber. We don't get enough of the right fatty acids. We don't get enough plant sterols, which are natural plant components that help lower cholesterol, because we don't eat enough fruits and vegetables, and we don't get enough antioxidants. Okay, there are clear gaps in people's diets, and they affect, you know, 95% of the U.S. population. Okay, what if I just try to close some gaps? Okay, I'm just going to do that with two little servings of food a day, and like, let's get you started. And that was step one foods. And when we initially introduced this, like I expected like people would feel a little bit better, right? Like maybe their, you know, bowel movements would be better because they're eating more fiber. But what started happening was, again, beyond my wildest dreams. I mean, people were reporting that their LDL cholesterol dropped 39 points. 39 points. That is a statin medication level effect. And so I said, like, what did you do? Did you become a vegan? Like, did you start running marathons? It's like, no, I just did what you told me, like two servings of this food a day, which is, they're so, and they're foods that people eat already, right? It's an instant oatmeal. It's a bar. It's a smoothie mix. It's, you know, it's again, people are familiar with these foods, except they have been formulated for health. To build health. That is the North Star behind step one foods, right? So every ingredient chosen for a, you know, for a purpose, no weird fillers, no additives, right? And every serving of every product meant to truly impact those nutritional deficiencies. So at least 5 grams of fiber, at least a gram of omega-3 fatty acids, at least a gram of plant sterols, the antioxidant equivalent of a couple of servings of fruits or vegetables, right? And all from real ingredients. So chia, flax, walnuts, almonds, again, all the things we know we should be eating, but don't, right? Because it's hard. How do I add chia to my diet? Okay, I'm going to make it easy for you, right? And so this is the idea, just two small, essentially snacks a day, right? Kind of instead of what you're eating already, because there's only so much room in our stomach, so it naturally displaces something else. And people were seeing statin level cholesterol reductions. And this is where we did something that no other company has done and that I'm super proud of. And that is, we did a randomized controlled clinical trial, because I'm a scientist, right? I know that the reports that we're getting are, you know, could all just be the outliers, right? Here's a handful of people that had amazing results and everybody else had nothing, right? So like, okay, we have to really look at this, right? So we worked with Mayo Clinic, University of Manitoba, randomized case-controlled clinical trial in a free living population. This was not a rigged study where, you know, people were, you know, held in a lab and every morsel of food was controlled, right? It was like, okay, here's a box of food. Choose whatever you want out of this. Eat it twice a day and we'll check your cholesterol before and after. Oh, and then we'll repeat this with similar foods from the grocery store that you might think are better for you, right? So again, this was not us versus Cheetos. This was us versus, an instant Quaker oatmeal and and Bear Naked granola and actually even Ensure smoothie mix, right? Like foods that people would think like this shouldn't be bad, right? And what we found was after 30 days, the control foods did nothing. Our foods lowered LDL cholesterol on average, that's the bad cholesterol, by 9%. 9% in 30 days with this tiny food intervention in a free living population. Okay. If I lower the average LDL of the US population by 9%, I finally dethroned heart disease as our number one killer. This is an incredible public health impact. But what was super exciting to me is in those patients that or those subjects that were tested, there were people that had close to 40% LDL reductions. Again, statin level effects with food in 30 days,
Wow,
right?
that's amazing. I mean,
And if you're someone who can't take statins. There are people who develop side effects from these things, or you don't want to. Like this is like I'm 40. Like maybe I'm looking at 50 years of a drug. Maybe I'd like to see if adjusting what I eat makes an impact. Or if you're not at goal despite maximum tolerated doses, like this is a no-brainer. And again, you don't have to devote your entire life to this. You can test it in 30 days. Am I a responder or not responder? So it's
Right.
super super exciting. So we're true food as medicine.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, and what I think is so great about the message and what I'm hearing is that it's not so much about what they're eating, it's what they're not eating that you're supplementing, right? So tell us a little bit about what do the step one foods look like? Is it all bars and shakes and the oatmeal packets? Is
Yeah,
it
so these are all like again, very familiar foods. There's, six different types of bars. There's, an instant oatmeal. There's an instant pancake mix. There's a smoothie mix. There's the sprinkle, which is like a raw ground granola. There's a nut butter. So things that, people are already eating, again, formulated in a way that builds health as opposed to does nothing or supports, disease.
Right.
And everything is in single serves, so it's super easy. A lot of it is food you can eat on the go because people are busy, right? I mean, I'm busy myself. I don't have time to, make an elaborate, breakfast in the morning. So I just, I've got my oatmeal or I put the sprinkle on yogurt and I'm like, I'm good to go. And what's great is because these are real foods that are, whole and of super high quality, they keep you full. You feel good when you eat these foods, right? And so a lot of the things that make eating for health difficult because you feel deprived or limited, right? It's like, no, I'm not taking over your stomach. I'm just getting you to do something simple a couple of times a day. Oh, and it tastes good. Oh, and it's convenient. Oh, and it's easy, right? And you don't have to think about it. And it's all, you don't have to count points. You don't have to look at calories. It's just like, just do this.
Yeah, the
And we were
simplicity of it
talking a
is
little bit
great.
earlier, about education. Education's super important. And part of what we do as a company, I write a weekly blog. There's a lot of, educational content, that is behind this company and that we offer to our customers. And frankly, for free, you don't have to be our customer. You can come to our website and read all the blogs. But it's, but I really believe in like you can educate, 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 but education without action is just a wish, right? And so what we do is like we're the action, okay? And now we're going to teach you, what else you can do, how to expand beyond this. And I would think my greatest accomplishment is that number one, I'm put out of work as a cardiologist because what I treat need not exist. 80% of heart disease, again, which is our number one killer, is completely preventable. Which is shock. I mean, that should be shocking to everyone. We spend so much money on heart disease and it shouldn't exist. So that's number one. Number two is that you don't even need step one. That what people are choosing, what is available in the grocery marketplace, you know, that you go into a grocery store and it's not a land, you know, it's not aisles and aisles of landmines, right? It's just whatever you put in your cart, it's good for you and it builds health and it's just easy. But right now, you know, we're the little engine that can, and we're leading, you know, we've got our flag and we're marching forward, and we hope everyone follows.
Right. I mean, we've been hearing, I mean, I think like between the Blue Zones diet and kind of the world, you know, the world has been educated on it, but yet the healthcare system hasn't really changed around it. And I do think, you know, whether it's the Mediterranean diet or how we've kind of communicated this to patients, the first path is always statins, you know, where even though you say,
the system is set up to treat disease. That's what it's set up for. It is not set up for prevention or building health. That is not our training. That is not the payment model, right? That is not the, you know, like the only people who seem to want to be, you know, to build health are patients, and nothing around them is actually helping that, right? The food environment is broken. Insurance doesn't really care, you know, because you're not going to be with them for very long. So your long-term health is of no interest to them. What's of interest to them is how much you cost them today, right? And pharmaceutical companies, right? They love it. They have an endless bucket of needs that need to be addressed with drugs. Look, and I'm not anti-drug. I prescribe medications all the time. They have a role, but they should be the complementary medicine, right? Like not the core. We have it backwards. The core is how we live our lives, how we sleep, how we nourish our bodies, how we exercise, right? That is true medicine. All this other stuff is complementary.
Right. And as you look at that and as this has changed. So, I mean, what I thought was exciting at Health was there was, you know, they had the Food as Medicine Pavilion. There were, you know, folks like Kroger. There were lots of different companies representing the movement.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, of course, there were the pharmaceutical companies on the show floor as well. And I had gone to Health, and then I went to AHA Scientific Sessions, where of course the GLP-1s are, you know, all over the place at that conference. As those drugs come into this, how do you see this kind of changing that? And I mean, I think, you know, in terms of that, even where the interest in the food as medicine movement is going, mm-hmm. that the GLP-1s are almost part of that. So what do you see as kind of the trajectory for this, both for patients as well as kind of the industry as a whole, where the incentives are, you know, not well aligned?
So, you know, there's no, I mean, look, GLP-1s are going to change medicine, and they're going to change medical care. They have a very broad impact, and we're learning, right? We're just tip of the iceberg of understanding all the things these drugs can do, which is exciting. It should also be scary, right? Like, you know, we make GLP-1s ourselves. I mean, naturally, in response to food. But this is what happens. We eat and we get this surge of GLP-1, then it returns back down. We eat, it surges, comes back down. What these drugs do is this, right? It never comes down, which is why they're so effective in terms of appetite suppression, food noise, right? Modulating insulin release. There's, you know, addictive behaviors. There's a lot of things that it does. But what else does this do, right? What other dominoes are we tripping up? And I hope, I mean, so far, you know, it's not looking bad, but we didn't understand that statins increase the risk of developing type 2 diabetes until we were, you know, had prescribed this stuff for 30 years, right? So again, I always take drugs with plenty of caution, because we're doing something that our bodies are not used to, right? So be gentle, gentle, gentle. Having said that, what I think GLP-1s do is provide us with this unbelievable opportunity for a reset. on the part of patients, right? Like you can, okay, wait, I can eat differently and I can lose weight and I feel okay, right? How can I then translate this to keep going off the drug, right? And that's gonna require a lifestyle change. I mean, frankly, if people did exactly what they do on GLP-1s on their own without the drug, they'd lose as much weight, right? It's not the drug that's making them lose weight. It's the fact that they've changed how they're eating, what they're doing. So if they could do it without that, that would be, the best. But it's hard in this food environment. So one is relearning what those dietary patterns need to be for the long haul. But number two is what I hope it does is that it creates an economic pressure on the food environment to change. It has to change. Making, Oreos into smaller cookies. So because we can't eat as many cookies because we're not hungry anymore because we're on GLP-1. That's not the solution. The solution is, can we, expand the, can we expand the breadth and availability of products that are actually helping people stay off these medications, not need them, right? We shouldn't, we're not, we were not born Ozempic deficient. We are not, our cholesterol's not high because we don't have enough Lipitor. Like there's a cause, right? We have to always address the root cause because if we don't address the root cause, we'll cure nothing. We'll cure nothing. These will be lifelong drugs. And again, I'm a little worried about that. I prescribe them, but I'm just
Yeah.
the caution.
No, I mean, I think it's really interesting. And I think what I've always thought is the best outcome or the best possible outcome for them is certainly not that the whole country is on them for the rest of their lives, which seems to be the trajectory we might be on right now.
Well,
But
it's
what,
unsustainable, right? It's unaffordable. Like we
right.
can't do it.
But should that, should we change paths as a, more intelligent and evolved society, that the right way is that the amount that it teaches us, right? That it isn't, that it teaches us that some people are responsive to this, that they need this, and that there are, that there are ways to kind of manage that that aren't necessarily being dependent on a shot every week, but something else that helps, but also that the foods themselves change. And so I'm reading about restaurants that are changing their food offerings because people want food that doesn't make them sick, when they're on GLP-1s, but that is also true, outside of GLP-1s, right? So these sort of lower fat, higher fiber, more vegetables, all of the things that we're trying to put back into the diet that people don't respond negatively to when they are on GLP-1s, going into restaurants that eventually maybe the mass food industry would also begin to take some of the less addictive elements of food, or some of the more addictive elements of food, out of them, and we would be eating more healthy food and a deeper understanding of the food as medicine concept, right? And that food is health, and it should be our first line of defense in all of this. So I know, recently the White House has, selected step one for a challenge to end hunger and build healthy communities. Tell us a little bit about that program and what you guys are doing kind of on a broader scale in some of these initiatives.
So, this is it's actually it turned out to be harder than I thought, and this is I would say this is kind of a telltale and endemic of this entire ecosystem and effort, because a lot of people talk about it, and I would say including the federal government, they talk, but they actually don't do. And so we're trying on a small scale. We had grandiose ideas that we would, have this partnership that we could put forward and, and help many, many first responders across the country. It's turned out to be something that is becoming more local because ultimately that effort felt like it was more talk than action. I'm really sad to say that because I really, really wanted, like, we were capable of making this broad difference, but we can't do it just, completely on our own. So anyway, I am very passionate about this. So I see first responders in my clinical practice as part of a wellness program. And so I'm involved in the screening part, right? So I see all their lab work. I see coronary calcium scans. Coronary calcium scans are scans people can have to look for early signs of atherosclerosis, buildup of plaque in heart arteries. And it's a wonderful test. It's not fail safe, but it's a wonderful test. And if you see calcium buildup in your heart arteries, the only reason why calcium is there is because you have some atherosclerosis. And kind of the more calcium you have, the worse, the kind of the more extensive the process is. So, what I would tell you is the lab work on first responders is shocking even to me. In their 20s, these men and women, they're healthy on lab work. In their 30s, problems are starting to show up. In their 40s, they're metabolically sick. In their 50s, it's like, oh my God, this is a ticking time bomb. The average age for a heart attack in law enforcement officers is 47. It's 47. That's 20 years earlier than the average US population. It's heartbreaking, right? So we're seeing calcium scores that are out of this world. You shouldn't have any calcium in your 30s. The highest score so far that I've seen in a 30-year-old law enforcement officer was 856. That is, that would be considered, something that maybe an 80-year-old might have. Like
So now, I mean, in this, sort of probably a layperson's question, is it, I mean, that makes me think that stress is a huge part of that. And that, I mean,
it's
yes,
all of it.
of
It's
course
all of
they,
it. It's stress. It's actually relative lack of activity, right? We think of, I mean, when they go into their careers, they're fit, they're strong, they're young, right? As time goes on, well, they spend a lot of time sitting. They're actually not like working out all the time. They're sitting in their cars. They're sitting behind desks, right? The stress is unbelievable, which doesn't help them make good decisions just in general about their health, right? Comfort food really comes into play. And they're eating poorly is the bottom line. And so there's a lot of obesity. There's a lot of, type 2 diabetes, pre-diabetes, insulin resistance, cholesterol profiles are, again, really, really sad. But there's something we can do. So we are trying to introduce these foods into their programs and also, obviously earlier intervention with medications. I mean, I'm putting, 30-year-olds on statins, which is like, wow. You don't typically don't do that unless they have something like familial hypercholesterolemia, which is like super high cholesterol, from the time they're born, like a genetic, issue with cholesterol management. But this is not for familial hypercholesterolemia. This is for early advanced atherosclerotic disease.
And have you, what about with kids at all? Have you tried?
So I'm an adult cardiologist, so I don't see the pediatric population. But the truth is, this process, this buildup of plaque in our arteries, this thing that is so preventable, it starts in childhood. In autopsy studies where they've looked at, these tragic deaths, whether it's accidents or, cancers or whatever, where they've done autopsies on children, the beginnings of plaque are there. They're, in Korean, Vietnam, soldiers that were killed during battle, they found, some with advanced atherosclerosis. Those are young men in their 20s. This starts early and it's preventable. And the biggest driver, yes, exercise is important. Not smoking is important. But if you're going to do one thing, it's change the food. Change the food because food drives so many of the risk factors that culminate in heart disease, right? High cholesterol, diet related, high blood pressure, diet related, excess weight, diet related. Insulin resistance, pre-diabetes, type 2 diabetes, diet related, poor diet related. Okay. Five of the major risk factors for heart disease. And there's only seven modifiable ones. So five of them, the other one is smoking and inactivity, right? Five are related to food. So if you change what you eat, you have such a broad impact on your health trajectory. And guess what? Food drives helps drive cancer. Food helps drive dementia, right? Food helps drive inflammatory disorders, arthritis, inflammatory bowel disease. Food is so central to everything, and we are not using it to its full potential. Right. And, the fact that, frankly, I am the only food as medicine company that has, food, not supplements, not drinks, right? But like food that you eat that has clinical data behind it and is, formulated to impact health, that we're it. It remains shocking to me.
Right. Right. And I mean, it continues. I mean, we talk about this a fair amount, but in terms of, why that research doesn't get done and how it gets done. So for you, for step one, how did you go about kind of getting that clinical research done? Was it entirely self-funded?
So there's, the reason why, pharma has the corner on this is, number one, they have a patentable product at the end, which can be protected, right? Number two, they can charge a lot for what they have, for what they have studied. So there's a big economic economic kind of advantage for pharma. For food, now you can't really patent food, right? Number one. Number two is your profit margins are very slim, right? It's not, you can make a pill for 5 cents and sell it for $1,000, right? Like that's not the economics. So it's very expensive to it's expensive to do a trial. And the financial rewards are not there. But I did this not because I had a patentable product or because I could jack up the prices of my foods. No, they're still, they cost like bars you'd buy in the grocery store. But it was important to me. This was that, because if I'm, I'm a physician. My goal is to help heal people. This is not a, empty promise. This is something that was super, super important to me. And we got help. We could not have done this on our own. Of all the supporters, we got actually a government grant from the province of Manitoba. And it's because we use some Canadian ingredients in our products, because they're just very interesting in terms of their nutrient composition. Again, whole real foods, Saskatoon berries, right? So we have a specific Saskatoon berry producer that supplies us with this, and they happen to grow up in Manitoba. We also use some pinto beans and things from there. So anyway, and they were very interested in, boosting their agricultural, sector. So it was like we were at the right place at the right time, but we couldn't have done it without them. And honestly, it took forever. I mean, this was a 5-year effort to get this clinical trial done, like from enrolling the patients, IRB, right? I mean, you have to go through the same regulations as if you were doing a drug, as if you were doing a procedure, right? It is incredibly complicated and very, very, prohibitive, from a time and effort perspective to do this. So I can understand why other food manufacturers haven't done it. But then I would say, like, well, we should make it easier to do, right? This is a system that is created around pharma, which I understand that's, where all the protections need to be, because we're putting, unknown substances into people, right? I was putting oats into people. Right. Like, why do I need to jump through the exact same hoops as someone who is creating a novel drug that our bodies have never been exposed to? Right. Like this, the whole thing is, there's so many things that are broken,
that's why we're here. And I think, yeah. I mean, there are so many things, and it's this sort of systemic part of the system that is misaligned. It's the sick care system. It's the payment models. It's the incentives. I love that you found the financial, backing you know,
Yeah, and willing partners, right? That we're willing to kind of do this, like, okay, we're not going to, you know, overcharge you. We're not going to, you know, overdo this. And I, you know, having trained at Mayo Clinic, I had lots of goodwill down there. And so I could work with people I knew, you know, University of Manitoba, that was, you know, kind of that relationship was smoothed by the government. So we it was like there, everyone was kind of on the same mission together. And that was really, really helpful. But it, you know, this it was a big undertaking, way bigger than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Tell me a little, like, so what's next? So we've done the clinical study. We see the results.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We know it's there. Are you in the process of, you know, when you're looking at, is it a consumer base? Are you looking to get, you know, you want physicians to prescribe it? Do you want to be a part of the healthcare system, you know, hospitals to kind of be offering it as their platform? What is the, what's your next step there?
So, you know, when we started and, you know, people thought I was crazy, right? Like, what? You're going to tell people to sprinkle something on their yogurt and that's like going to help them? I'm like, yeah. And so, you know, when I started this, food as medicine was something people talked about. They never actually thought about, like they couldn't, you know, kind of envision it as an actual intervention, right? It's theoretically, we all talk about it, but how do you actually do it? Okay, so I'm actually doing it. And I would say when I started, the reception from the medical community to a food-based solution was basically zero. I mean, it was not something that people were willing to look at. I think as we are continually sort of coming up against, you know, brick walls with medications, like at some point they can only do so much. And it's because we're, again, you have to address the root cause of why we need them in the first place. The medical community is becoming far more accepting of this. So yes, to your point, I am working hard to spread the word, not just to individuals, you know, online who are, and we're primarily a direct-to-consumer brand. We're an e-commerce company. Our products are not in stores. And this is all to, you know, make sure that we can deliver our foods at the lowest possible cost to people. Because once you put them on grocery store shelves, right, there's, you add all these layers of cost on, and we want to keep those, you know, we want to keep those as low as possible. So, we are really getting, you know, traction now with dietitians who are, you know, again, seeing the same thing. Like, I can teach you to do all this, but here, just start here and we'll go backwards, you know, so you don't need this anymore, but let's just get you an early success, right? So a lot more interest from the dietitian community, very receptive. Clinicians are starting to come on board. So there's, you know, I'm seeing the percolation of a movement, which is super exciting, but it will only be as successful as pharma, which is where it should be, if it gets paid for the way pharma gets paid for, right? Like, it is crazy. The, you know, the statin, right? It costs nothing. It costs nothing. For a lot of people, copay is zero, right? To eat in a way so you don't need the statin, no one's paying for that. Right. So we are, you know, we're allowing is the wrong word, but we are turning a blind eye to the fact that people are eating in a way that is driving their cholesterol up. And we're just like, okay, I'm not going to pay attention to that. I'm not going to do anything about that, but I am going to pay for the drug that makes your numbers look normal.
Right.
I mean, it is completely messed up and it has to change. It has to change.
I will say that, I mean, you know, we started talking about this topic a few years ago. It has evolved. I mean, and the climate and temperature of it is going up, right? People are interested. But again, just, you know, because healthcare is one, slow to change, but two, the systems that are in place keep the systems in place, right?
Very sclerotic. Yeah.
Just by inertia. But at the American Heart Association, where there was, you know, many a GLP-1 booth, there was also a food as medicine pavilion, you know, and that was the first year. So I think that, you know, we're seeing it come through, you know, to some degree, the demands of the physicians, the clinicians are calling for it. It was not perhaps as crowded as some of the other booths, but, you know, it's getting there, right? And so how we make that happen, what we do to put it, you know, put this conversation, I mean, both at the beginning, you know, whether how you do it at schools with kids. I mean, we've had, you know, the folks from Eat Real on here on the show, you know, to educate kids about the importance of this, but then take it all the way through so that we are, you know, using food, making sure food is the first pass, you know, as opposed to, you know, the never.
I'm a firm believer that the entire solution is, you know, can be addressed with home economics. Bring home economics classes back, real home economics, right? Where you learn, frankly, even how to garden a little and, you know, how to, you know, budget for, you know, for food for four, how to not waste it, how to, you know, use every part of the chicken, right? Like we can do this. We can do this. And it would be a huge, huge impact. That, I mean, that's the long-term solution. I know there's a lot of discussion about training doctors to, you know, in food. It's great. It's great. The problem is by the time you have the, I mean, it takes a lot, like 14 years. Remember, it took 14 years to train me to be a cardiologist. Okay. By the time you turn over enough cardiologists that you have, you know, people kind of more like me who are very comfortable talking about nutrition and they've, you know, I'm self-taught, but, you know, that have been taught the things that I've self, you know, self-taught. I mean, it's going to be a generation plus, you know, and people need solutions today. So I don't know. There's like this whole, there's this whole bridge that needs to be built, but it requires, you know, it takes a village. It takes everyone to kind of say, hey, this is important. We should, you know, we can do this and we can have an impact.
Yeah. And the, you know, the opportunity, I mean, we talk also about sort of the technology of this, of how to give people the sort of easier interventions. I think when I think about kind of when we talked about social determinants of health and how would physicians be taking that data and to act on it when they're so busy and overwhelmed, that maybe some of the tools that are out there, whether it's, you know, the AI scribes we talk about so often and health coaches and even, you know, sort of between the mind and body connection, ways to educate people using that technology. But we always sort of end on a positive, on a hopeful note. So tell us when you think about kind of what is working, what's positive, what are you most excited about as we look to, it's kind of crazy, but this year is coming to a close as we look to 2026 and beyond.
Yeah. So, you know, look, Step One Foods has been the most professionally, you know, exciting, satisfying thing I have ever done. I love my practice. I love seeing patients. You know, it is something that is core to me, but I have impacted so many lives, you know, through this endeavor. And so we are continuing to grow. We are adding new products. So, you know, kind of giving people more choice. And then honestly, my goal is to keep going. Like I've done, I think, you know, a lot with cholesterol, but there's so many other conditions that can benefit from the right nutrition support. And that's where I'm going next. Like my next passion is I'm going to reverse type 2 diabetes because I can, because I know it's possible, right? We can do this with food. So my positive view of everything is like, look what one person has accomplished. And there's, I'm sure I, as I, you know, as this is aired and other people listen, like there's probably many, many people in the audience who are like me, who want to do this, like, go do it. There is no end. This is, you know, here's food, here's drugs, and look at all this white space in between. And it's begging to be filled. And I think we are finally at a point where multiple entities are waking up to the fact that this white space needs to be filled. It needs to be filled, and it needs to be encouraged to be filled. And I can't wait to see what that looks like. And again, I am my dream is that I will be put out of work as a cardiologist. That's my flag that I planted. So
well, I love that. And I think it's so, you know, I do think that there's so much almost, you know, low hanging fruit, if you will. If people would just take that low hanging fruit and eat it, we would solve lots of problems. And do that. But I love that. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Clotas. It's so exciting to see, you know, the work that you're doing at Step One Foods and how it relates to the industry as a whole. For our audience, please, you know, go to steponefoods.com. You can try it today. I am going to, that's for sure. And, you know, I think there's, as Dr. Clotas mentioned, materials and information on the blog and things that you can get to learn and educate yourself. And please share this episode with your colleagues and friends. And of course, come back and listen to our new Food is Medicine series, as well as the Female Founder series that this will be a part of for Health Impact Live. Thank you so much, Dr. Clotas.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a joy to speak with you.
This is Megan Antonelli signing off.
Thank you for joining us on Digital Health Talks, where we explore the intersection of healthcare and technology with leaders who are transforming patient care. This episode was brought to you by our valued program partners, Automation Anywhere, revolutionizing healthcare workflows through intelligent automation, Natera, advancing contactless vital signs monitoring, Elite Groups, delivering strategic healthcare IT solutions, CellPoint, securing healthcare identity management and access governance. Your engagement helps drive the future of healthcare innovation. Subscribe to Digital Health Talks on your preferred podcast platform. Share these insights with your network and follow us on LinkedIn for exclusive content and updates. Ready to connect with healthcare technology leaders in person? Join us at the next Health Impact event. Visit healthimpactforum.com for dates and registration. Until next time, this is Digital Health Talks, where changemakers come together to fix healthcare.